Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm doing my radio show. I need him.
Okay, Sister Donna, you're on. Huh? Welcome to the Initiative Welcome to the Initiative Radio Network. I'm Sister Carmen K. Muhammad, and tonight we have our new host, Sister Donna. She's debuting her own show tonight on Sundays, and it will be at 7 p.m. Eastern. Of course, if you're in the Central Time, it's 6 p.m. So with that, we're going to welcome our dear beautiful sister Ann. How are you doing tonight, sister?
I'm all right, thank you, considering Murphy's Law is busy in my life this evening.
Yes.
I didn't hear any theme music, so I guess that didn't work, and confusion about the time.
It's okay.
But here we are.
Yes, ma'am, that's right. So I'm very excited today to welcome you into the Initiative Radio Network. You are a new family member, and that we're just so delighted to have you. So with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to you so you can explain to the audience what your show is all about.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I will be talking about education issues as they affect Black children, especially boys. Most of the time, I'll probably talk what the highly gifted go through in public schools. All of it will be concerning public schools. And I got motivated to do this type of writing. I've written a book about it, and now this type of show, so I can talk about it because of what my own son went through in public schools. And I guess for this show, it's not going to be the usual 2 hours since we're starting. I don't know. There was confusion about the start time, so we're only going to do 1 hour. And I will be reading from some articles about Black children in public school. And then I will also read a little bit about the highly gifted as well. If anyone has any comments or questions here, feel free to call in and tell us what you think or about your own child's experiences. The call-in number is 563-999-368. So this first article is from the Ed Advocate, edadvocate.org. The article is called Black Boys in Crisis, Eliminating the School-to-Prison Pipeline. It's by Matthew Lynch, dated September 21st, 2017. And these are just excerpts from the article. So you can go to the Ed Advocate and read the whole article if you want. If you need the link, you can go to my website, www.stopdiseducation, diseducation, .com. Stopdiseducation.com, and you can leave me a message there and I'll post the link for you. So, Black boys' learning styles and social skills are often misconstrued as problems by educators. I would say that's certainly true. Those who have disadvantaged home lives are often accustomed to activity still and to shouting and argument as a means of communication. Well, that may be true for some. I'm quite sure not every disadvantaged home has, you know, issues like that going on, but moving on. That lack of learning leads to higher school dropout levels, higher rates of poverty, and ultimately higher incarceration rates. This must have been a piece of a sentence, and I didn't copy the whole thing. That's common sense. We know that. And he, the Black boy, may wind up trying to make ends meet by engaging in petty crime if he's dropped out of school and can't get a job. Yeah. Increasingly, though, black boys are incarcerated for acts that should not have put them in prison, for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, for talking back to an officer, for being suspected of smoking marijuana, or like Khalif Browder, they are simply unjustly incarcerated for crimes they did not commit. This unjust punishment has a basis in racism. That's no surprise to us. The school-to-prison pipeline indicates that there is a relationship between minority young men who are disciplined in K-12 settings through suspensions and expulsions, and those who end up incarcerated later in life. Here are the alarming statistics. Black students are nearly four times as likely to face suspension as their white peers. Black high school students have increased 11 times more quickly than white peers since 1970. Students suspended during their freshman year are two times as likely to end up dropping out of high school. 8% of all men in federal prison never earned a high school diploma. To more troubling statistics, in Indiana, 95% of all suspensions in 2002 to 2003 occurred as a result of minor offenses such as disruptive behavior. I don't know why that statistic is so old, but that's what it says. In Colorado, one in every seven black students is disciplined in schools, though just one in every 25 white students faces the same disciplinary action. Reports that black students make up 39% of students suspended in Florida, though they only account for 23% of the public school population in the state. Black students are suspended and expelled more due to unfair discipline practice, appearing disrespectful or threatening. Drilling down to the county level throws up even more dire statistics. In Orange County in Central Florida, 51% of the students suspended, though they account for just 27% of the county's public school population. Chicago public school system, over a third of African-American boys were suspended at some point during the 2013 to 2014 school year. 10% of the nation's public school students are black. Of all students that are three times more likely to face suspension or expulsion than their white peers. Clear, he goes on to say, students who drop out of high school have a much higher chance of ending up in prison, and we know that. That black students are suspended at much higher rates than their white peers points to a direct correlation between discipline in grade school and a place in a prison cell. Given the above, the fact that the U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the world is no surprise. The road to lockup starts in the public school system, and it starts with unfair punishment. And that's all I took from that article. Sister Pam, did you have any thoughts on that information?
Yes, ma'am, I do. I was listening to the statistics that you was giving. I'm like, wow, that is so interesting. I mean, already we have to have a jump start on a system, on the education system, even before our children get there, because that's already a system that is set up for them to fail. So that's what we have to realize as a people, that we're not going in there on an even plane. We already have to do things that will enhance our children's education, their well-being, before they even get into the public schools, if we're going to, you know, put them in public schools. So, therefore, in my humble opinion, we should already be doing other things differently from our children being put into public schools to give them a fair share of life and their education. So I just want to add that, sister, but great information that you are sharing. I hope, again, that our listeners will take advantage of this and take heed to what you're sharing with them, because that can make their child's education and overall livelihood a lot better than, you know, what some of us are going through at this time. So thank you.
Thank you for that. The next article is also from the Ed Advocate. It's called Black Boys in Crisis, Lock Them Up and Throw Away the Key. Also by Matthew Lynch, dated September 18, 2017. Again, he's saying the U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the world. Black males comprise the highest percentage relative to overall population. And he's reiterating some statistics. And he says, our public schools are supposed to be great equalizers, but the decks are stacked against Black boys from a young age. The U.S. Department of Education Office for Civil Rights reports that Black students make up just 18% of preschoolers, but account for almost half of all school suspensions. And those statistics don't improve as students move up through the grades. According to the Sentencing Project, an organization that researches disparity in the justice system, one in three black men will likely see the inside of a prison cell at some point in their lives. That's amazing and very disheartening. And I'm sure quite true, because it's just set up to be that way. Public schools have the potential to be great equalizers for our children and youth. We are aware that we have disadvantaged students in our midst, so why aren't we employing every tactic we've got, those outside factors that are so detrimental? When we throw up our hands and say that Black boys can't be saved, or that individual students are better off serving suspensions or expulsions than sitting in our classrooms learning, we don't have the power. We don't have power in the lives of our students. However, I think most rational educators would argue, or he's saying, Black students that are not behaving properly or can't behave properly or whatever, we throw up our hands and say, that is just not always true. I'm sure a lot of the time it's not the case. With my son, I invite the listeners to go to the website, www.stopdiseducation.com, and you'll get a taste of his story, what he went through in school. And he was a very well-behaved, happy child. And he was, like, according to the school's own testing, at least about 5 years ahead of grade level. To skip him or give him any, advanced work, advanced enough to hold his interest, so he would be bored and play, and they were claiming severe ADHD needed special ed. So
yes, ma'am.
If I had not been involved enough, to, first of all, before he ever started school, I knew what he could do. And I hadn't been trying to make him learn anything. Learning was just fun for him and for me. We would just sit there and read, and I took him to museums, and he just loved learning. And he got school far ahead of the game, and they bored him to where he hated school from the first day of first grade. I never took him to kindergarten because I knew they didn't have anything for him. Grade, they would pay attention and appreciate how far advanced he was and skip him appropriately. And their reason was because he needed to be with children his age. Make any sense, because he just had nothing in common with children his age in those classes other than the age. They're very different. The other first, my son was reading books and magazines at home and trying to do science experiments, while the children in his first grade class were learning, one syllable words on flashcards, maybe two, I can't remember, but what I do remember is one syllable on flashcards. And my son could read just about anything you put in front of him. So he was very bored, and pretty soon he got very angry and frustrated. And if they didn't want him to play, sometimes he would act out, not severely. He never got in a fight or anything, but he was justifiably bored and unhappy and miserable. And some of the time, about half the time when he was in public school, some of the years I took him out and homeschooled. Save his and what was left of his self-esteem. Anyway, so I do invite your listeners, my listeners now, to go to the website. Yeah, I have to get used to this. stopdiseducation.com. and have a look. And if you have any comments or questions there, there is a place on every page of the website for you to leave something. The next article, did you have something else to add?
I was just, it's very interesting that you were saying that your child was above average and that he was, you know, smart, that he pretty much finished his work. And then, you know, of course, like you said, children are going to get bored if they don't have anything else to do. And I know a young lady who mentioned something similar to what you had just said. Her child gets finished with his work, and you know, and they want to label him as having some type of disability, even though he's, you know, he keeps up with his level of grading. And so it just brought back, you know, it's just like, wow, the same thing is happening right now. So I told her, don't allow them to label him like that. If he get finished first, then if a teacher have any sense, she'll give him some more work. So therefore, he won't be bored and will be able, you know, to continue his work while the other children are finishing theirs. To me, that will be sensible as a student. But of course, that they don't want our children to show their smartness anyway, so they'll do anything. Most of them will to not allow them to be in what that they are. So when you said that, it turned a light on you. And I'm like, dang, that's going on right now. But I did, you know, to look into the school system, because as Malcolm X, when he was younger, that a teacher asked him what he wanted to be. I believe he said a lawyer. A doctor. I think it was a doctor. If I'm not mistaken, if I am someone, please correct me, and I'll come back in and correct it on the air the next time we're on, because I don't want to be to mislead anyone. I don't want, if I make a mistake, you know, I definitely will stop to come back in and rectify that mistake. But nevertheless, I think he wants to be a lawyer or a doctor. I have to make sure I'm correct on it. And the teacher told him, your people would never go to you, you know, if you're I believe it was a lawyer. You know, people won't trust you. And he was small. He said that happened to him. So think of all those years ago, that happened to Malcolm X and where we are today. And they still put that in our children's head that they aren't smart enough, that they're below average. So we have to be really particular about who is teaching our children, whether they're teaching them, question them when they come home. How was your day? What did you do? Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Excuse me. A lot of times, though, little children don't know how to answer those questions. They'll just say, oh, nothing, or it was okay. They don't know how to tell you what was,
yes, ma'am,
what was going wrong or what was going on, period. So parents
mm-hmm.
need to go and visit those classes sometimes. See
yes,
them,
yes.
Make them know
yes,
that you care, you're involved, and you're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
be learn what you need to know to stand up to what's wrong and advocate for your child.
Mm-hmm.
Because your little child cannot advocate for him or herself. They need us there willing to do that for them. And then when all else
yes.
fails and they're not getting what they need in public school, we need to just take them out.
Right.
And for the
you're
school
right.
to get money for having my children. I'm sorry.
Yes.
But,
no, go ahead.
You know, the school
your passion.
Yeah, well, so the school is getting money having our child sitting in their in a chair in their classroom. So
right.
why should we leave our child there not getting what they want, I mean, what they need,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
yet the school is getting paid for having them there? Take them out. And don't think you can't homeschool, because it's not rocket
that
science.
Hard.
You cannot do worse. Yes, ma'am. You cannot do worse for your child than a school that is killing their interest in learning and making them feel less able and less worthy. They don't need
yes.
that. They're better off
that's
at home. If that's what's happening.
Wow. Go ahead, sister.
Go
ahead, Tatiana. No, I love
yeah.
your passion. And you definitely you are absolutely right. And when I said talk to your children, yes, I know your children may be 5 or 6 years old. I'm not saying there. I'm not saying that do not go to the school and be, you know, a major force among your children or in the school system. Definitely, you should take yourself there and see what they're learning. Sometimes make a surprise visit. Don't tell me you're coming. You know, I just come to peep in on my child and see what is really going on. That's
right.
What I do sometimes too. Now, I'm not going to tell you every time I'm going to come and see my baby. If you're doing it right, then you won't have a problem whatever time I come to see him or her. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, you're absolutely right. Yes, ma'am, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Be as we say, a force and power of your own life, and also that means in your child life. And as you say, you can educate your child yourself. Look at the YouTube. They definitely have so much stuff online now that's not hard, and it can go from the first grade on up to higher levels. So be an advocate, as Sister Donna has often said over and over, and we need to do that, because I'm going to say that sometimes I talk with most of my relatives or the children that's not even kids to me. I talk to them sometimes, and I'm like, how was you? For the most part, the ones that I talk to, they, like, you know, I like school. There's some I talk to, they're like, I don't like school, it's boring, and they don't want to go. Now, you know that a child should not want to go to school, but that tells you that we definitely need a new paradigm of teaching, because a lot of this school system, the curriculum that they're teaching our children, is not getting to the genesis or the, as you say, giftedness that they have. It's just not doing it. It's boring as heck. When I was going to school, if I didn't, you know the, you know, the goal that I had, and I don't like starting something and not finish it, I would be boring out of my mind with some of the professors that I had. I mean, they was boring, and here I was, you know, as old as I was, and compared to small children, I only can imagine sometimes how it seems like foreign language to them are so uninterested to what the teacher may be teaching. So with that, I digress, sister. I digress. Thank you.
And I am a very strong proponent of, but I urge you to find out the laws for homeschooling in your own state, because they do differ from state to state, and some have very lax regulations. Some require a whole lot of the parent, but it's worth it. Whatever they require of you, you can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's for your child, and he or she only gets to grow up once, and they need you to make sure they get the best education that they can get out of their childhood. If they're not getting it in school, then they should get it at home. Sometimes private school will do the job. Sometimes they won't. You give it a try if you can afford that, and see how it goes. I know when my son was little, we visited two of the best private schools in Virginia. As a matter of fact, a white attorney friend of mine took me to visit one of them. And when we left there, he said to me, if I were black, I wouldn't want my child there. Why?
Mm.
Because you could count on one hand how many black children were there. And they didn't seem to be interested in the son. And then the other one that we went to, big, beautiful school, state-of-the-art everything, just a beautiful school. But they were not interested in thinking out of the box operated in. Yeah, they did better than public school as far as propelling kids toward college. But if you come in so differently gifted, they didn't want to be bothered, and why should they? They make plenty of money off the kids that fit into their box. So
wow,
maybe the answer. And if nowadays, it's not like when I was homeschooling my son. That was a very lonely experience by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to find the homeschoolers. It's different now because with the internet, you can find support, find lesson plans, like you said. You can find what you need. It's not a lonely thing anymore. City, if you find other homeschoolers, you all can take turns teaching different classes. Some of you may be stronger and not others, so you can share that.
to just make sure you're following the laws of your state.
Yes, yes.
The
Thank you for saying it.
Yes,
right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to interrupt, but when you said make sure that you're following the laws of your state, city, and because I wouldn't want you to break the laws, you know, because a lot of this sister who went to jail for driving to homeschool her child. I want to get her also on the show.
Yes.
We're trying to get her on the show. Yes, ma'am. So I'm glad you're saying it. Look into the laws and see what are the procedures, et cetera, so they won't try to get you for, you know, going against the school system or whatever, you know, they may determine these days. So thank you, Sister Donna, for that. But because it's absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, Satan is already always, you know, trying to rear his head when we're trying to do what is right anyway. So with that, yes, ma'am, I just want to add that.
And I mentioned in the first article, the author had mentioned the name Khalif Browder. And this article from the Ed Advocate by the same guy, Matthew Lynch, dated September 16, 2017, is talking about what happened to him. He was imprisoned for a crime he didn't commit. He refused to take a plea deal to get out. In a few years, his lying accuser left the country, and Khalif was finally set free, but he couldn't recover mentally, and he ended up committing suicide.
Yes.
And that was a tragedy.
Oh my God.
He was a good guy.
Yes,
so,
ma'am. Oh,
you know,
oh
that type of thing. Go ahead.
No, finish talking, but I saw the story. I haven't looked at the story. I'm not saying that I saw it advertised on YouTube. And when I heard, I read some of it. Sadly, and it breaks my heart to know our children. Yes, that's our children. And we got to stop with just because it didn't come through your wombs that you don't think that's your child. That is your child, too, or your nephew or your grandson or your brother, or, you know, basically what I'm saying, we have to feel each other's pain to make a difference in this lifetime and stop thinking of us being so foreign to each other. We are blood, you know, and what happens to one definitely can happen to the other. And they don't care about your religion.
That's right.
They don't care about your organization.
Yeah.
They don't care how much money you have. They don't care about your gender.
Yeah.
They don't even care about your age these days. And that is the truth. So we better stop caring about the nonsense, too, and stop fighting over religion. Are they ignorant that we are even free? We'll fight over that once we're free. But until then, we better stick together. Now, I'm just joking. Don't even fight over after that. But what I'm saying, systematically, we may not be in change physically, but we are definitely in change systematically, morally, mentally, spiritually, and all of that, and then some, and it's with your society that we live in. And with that, sister, I just had to say that. But continue, ma'am, with your story of the young man. You're absolutely right. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you for things that you said. We just have to really pay attention and think more like a village. We've lost that, and we need to get it back because we need each other. And our children need us to work together, to help each other, lift up each other's children as well as our own. I mean, we can't, it's hard to do it alone. It can be done, but it's very, very hard. For me, I was single parenting, homeschooling. I couldn't have a career outside of the home. What I could do to earn money working from home, but it was a very no-frills existence for us. And we did all right, but it was, you know, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, very lonely back then. It doesn't have to be that lonely for homeschoolers now because it's a whole lot easier to find other homeschoolers. And, you know, the children, especially if it's an only child like my son was, they don't have to be all alone learning. You can get together with other people homeschooling. Oh, excuse me. I just dropped my phone. But,
yeah, yes, ma'am.
We need to think more like a village and look out for each other and each other's
That's right.
children.
That's right.
Yes. What else? Let's see here. Black Boys in Crisis. Oh, I read that one. Believe that. Counteracting Racial Stereotypes. This is also from The Advocate by Matthew Lynch, dated September 12, 2017. And it says, ignorance is the enemy. Amen. The result is that black kids get locked up. In this article, we'll discuss three ways that we can counteract the racial stereotypes that are destroying the lives of black boys. Whose racial stereotypes he's not saying, but anyway. Okay. One solution he's offering is creating safe spaces. Creating spaces that allow black youth to engage in critical discourse about those feelings and experiences that define their identities is key. These may be after-school programs that include a discussion section with a trained social worker. They may be sessions with school counselors or a trusted teacher. They may be meetings with a pastor or other religious leader. What is of paramount importance is that the counseling party recognizes the difficulties of a black boy growing up in today's America. For this reason, it may be profitable to seek successful black men who emerge from a similar background and can offer appropriate focused advice. That's all well and good and important, and yes, sounds helpful, but it starts right there in the school. Most public school teachers, most of those women are white, and most of them are not trying to give black boys the best opportunity to excel and thrive and soar like an intellectual eagle. That's why parents have to be so involved. I know that sometimes black families get their kids into schools that maybe are more progressive, more open-minded toward black boys, and everything goes along just fine. Or maybe the black parents are teachers and that gets more respect, whatever. Feeling, and from the statistics, that is far from the norm in our public schools, and parents need to be aware and involved. And not only to, I mean, you must do that if it's needed, but you also need to get in there and volunteer too, because you don't want them to be able to say you're nothing but a thorn in their side, pain in their butt, however they're going to say it, and give them an excuse to ignore you. So try to be helpful as well, but you've got to be in your child's corner, not who is. The next solution this author is offering is restorative justice. The emphasis is not on the punishment of the offender, but rather on repairing harm and creating whole, positive relationships. Often, the solution is achieved through mediated interactions between victim and offender. The outcome may vary according to the situation, but has been shown to be overwhelmingly positive. Now, I can testify to that, because when my son was in fifth grade, and he had a teacher who made a comment when I asked him after class one day, how's my son doing? Do I need to talk to him about anything? And he said, oh, don't worry, I will break him. Like my son was some kind of horse to be broken or something. So I took him out and started homeschooling, and I met with the superintendent. That was in the fall, and he said in the spring, classes in middle school. The superintendent said this. So, but unfortunately, they made my son go to the school that we were zoned for, which happened to be the most school in the whole district, the whole city. It was notorious for violence and poor education outcomes, and made my gifted son, older, maybe he was 11, go to school with these kids that were the teachers in the hall. Cussing and cussing, and it was just crazy. And there's my son trying to see how long he could keep a feather up in the air by blowing it. I mean, and I know this because I saw it. I was there a lot, looking, observing. And at one point, my son, being different, being younger and smaller, you know, he got picked a lot. And there were these two particular boys who really picked on him a lot. And there was an assistant vice principal who took an interest and counseled those boys. I think he did them separately and then got them together. And before the semester was over, they were all right. They were, I won't say quite friends, but they got along pretty well. There was no more, you know, meanness and that type of thing going on between my son and those. That does work if you have a good teacher or counselor or assistant principal will get in there and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then the last revision, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. We was talking about where they had placed your song, in that school where it was violence and I guess lack of poverty, et cetera. And that's another thing about our black school that I feel that we have to do better, even though so-called predominantly black, and take pride in our school. Some of us need to ship up or ship out, too, if you're not interested in teaching your own for the betterment. So, yes, I'm going to talk about the white ones there. Our prejudice with that white supremacist mindset, as well as the black folks who don't live up to their responsibility, take pride in our children. If you feel like that, then you need to get out of the way where somebody else can come in there and do the work and give those children love and guidance that they definitely deserve. And yes, ma'am, I just wanted to add that out.
Thank you for bringing that up. Remember, it was surprising to me to find out that some of my son's most negative teachers that seemed to be doing their best to make him fail were black.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't assume that your child is in good hands just because they have a black teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can find out what's going on.
You're absolutely right. Because some of us, I'm going to keep it real here, at worse than some of the white supremacy, because we have adopted that mindset of hatred, self-hatred toward our own. So we have to be aware of those too.
Yes.
And if they're not done right, we've got to get them out also. Yes, ma'am. I'm very, very serious about it. Okay, yes, ma'am. So, I can't help it when it comes to our babies. We have to save our babies.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, now a little bit about gifted. This article is from the Sang Gifted SengGifted.org, SengGifted.org. It's the feature article called Sorry Differentiation Still Doesn't Work. It's dated June 27, 2015, by Jim DeLisle. Now, this is a white man with a PhD, and he's saying a lot of things that I have always said, but I am not white and I don't have a PhD. So I'm just going to read his words. When I argued that gifted kids needed to be educated with others who are at least as capable as they are, I was called elitist. That is so true. If you try to say, but the child needs this or that, because just the same way a severely learning disabled child needs specialized attention, a severely gifted child needs specialized attention, or they're going to lose interest in, you know, their advanced gifts that they once wanted to pursue. It's these kids should be nurtured so that they can grow and do great things for society, you know, and for us, our black gifted. But the schools will tear them down if we're careful and involved and watching and letting them know that we're watching. And don't be afraid to just disenroll them for homeschool and what they need in public school. Back to this article, the man is writing, when I lambasted the talent-laden definition of giftedness adopted by the National Association for Gifted Children in 2010, the field would fade away unless we aligned ourselves with regular education initiatives. They don't want you to rock the boat. They don't want you to try to make changes. They like things the way they are, and they want you to do things the way they've always been done. And it's not fair to the children. And when it's not fair and it's not working and it's killing their interest in learning, we need to take them out of those schools. But nothing I have ever written ignited such passion as my Education Week article. Now, this is Jim DeLisle talking. Differentiation doesn't work. published in January 2015. In the first 2 weeks after its appearance, more than 500,000 folks had read it, and it went viral on websites both within and outside of the gifted child education community. Then and now, I have one message. As much as you'd like to believe otherwise, differentiation still doesn't work. Smart kids will take care of themselves, I've heard more times than I care to remember. Let's spend our money on kids who really need it. Really? Kids who really need it? This is still the author writing. How about gifted kids like these? For example, the 5-year-old kindergartner who reads chapter books at home but is relegated to simple picture books at school. Yes, yes, yes. The third grader who is forced to be a tutor for a classmate who has difficulty learning because to whom much is given, much is expected back. And that is so true. That happened to my son when public school just wasn't giving him anything and I withdrew him for homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to let him be around young children, I asked if he could just take one or two classes, maybe the art and music class. Oh, no, they wouldn't do that. But go there and be a tutor. And he was tutoring math, and I think he was helping tutor science as well. It was a third or fourth grade class. It's in the book. It's in the book, and it's documented. But so I know this is true, and they do that. When they can't teach, then they get the kids to tutor. And that's not fair. The sixth grader, who we bore and nuanced, and is criticized by her teacher for adding too many unnecessary details to a simple writing project, telling them, a child who can be that creative and imaginative, and is a good teacher, but it's not the simple instructions that the teacher gave, so they don't want the child to do all that they can do with a story. Keep it simple, just follow the directions, child, making them be less than they are. That sixth grader needed an advanced writing class. Another example, the 15-year-old, who was told that his high emotions and in-depth understanding of the human condition be around. And here's a quote, why can't you just chill out once in a while? He hears from classmates and adults. And that's very sad to put on a child because the very highly gifted are very sensitive to what's going on in the world, in their own family if stuff is going on. But they know what's happening. They see the news. They know what's happening in the world. Painful for them. It's frightening for them. And like this comment is saying, they have high emotions about it. They understand deeply. And it really bothers them. A highly gifted, sensitive child can't help but think about it. You know, so they need us to be understanding to that and support them in their feelings and help them cope. And the last example he gives is the 17-year-old who has ambitions to become a carpenter or poet or video game designer and is told those career options aren't gifted enough to hold value. Somebody who, I mean, some people are brilliantly gifted working with their hands. Brilliant carpenters, brilliant architects, you know, brilliant electricians and plumbers, all these people who can build these beautiful buildings for businesses, for living in. We can't build them. How are you going to tell a child, no, you that's not gifted enough. You don't want to be a carpenter or a poet. Poetry is important. It's a vehicle for expression, and they need that. And you're going to tell them they shouldn't be a poet. It's not a gifted enough endeavor. Even video game designer. Maybe the child would design a game that's not so full of violence and gore and so many of the video games are full of now. You know, maybe they would come up with something educational maybe or fun, but not such negative fun. But the world won't get that because some teacher told this child, no, that's not a gifted thing, do something else. So we have to be careful how we talk to these children, are closing doors on them before they can even get through, you know, an open one.
Right.
Gifted kids, yes. Were you going to add anything else?
No, you are hitting some great points, sister. You're absolutely right. So I was just agreeing with you. Beautiful point.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I'm agreeing with this article because
mm-hmm.
my son lived through this stuff. And, you know, and this part, I'm talking about the gifted, but even the quote-unquote regular or average kids, they deserve a fair opportunity in school, in public school. They deserve the best opportunities that they're capable of participating in and doing well. They should not be held back, look at them, and because they're black and because they're a boy, male, white, teacher or any teacher will look at them and think, well, they can't do this. They're not smart enough. I know that. Plus, I know it's going to be a behavior problem. That
mm-hmm.
one. You know, these preconceived
mm-hmm.
negative ideas about our children. And it's not there, but sometimes it takes us being there, talking to these teachers and counselors
right.
and principals to get them to open their eyes. Mm-hmm. Them again, I say, take them out of the schools because the schools are hurting the kids and it's not worth it for them to be there. So the article goes on, gifted kids' intellectual, academic, social, and emotional needs are just as vibrant as those of any other special needs student, but dismissed by people who assume what a cakewalk it is to be smart. Even their parents are subject to criticism. Oh, how lucky you are to have a gifted child, for parents who have kids with problems. Have no idea, but because of the way society shifted, we do have problems because our children are hurting and we can't force the schools or society differently and take them seriously and really care the way they need to be cared for. Plus, as parents, I mean, it is up to us. The
yes,
gifted
ma'am.
Kids, ask one of them how many colleagues. Yeah. Ask teachers of gifted kids. Ask one of them how many colleagues assume they have the easiest job in the school because teaching gifted kids can't possibly be difficult. I imagine if you're in a public school setting or any school setting, even teachers that have the gifted certification and they supposedly know what to do and how to do it, they still have to follow a structure. In school can be difficult, I imagine. Homeschooling my son, easy because I followed his interests. And
mm-hmm.
he had interests all over the place. So he wasn't missing out on anything. The facilitator for him, I made sure that he had the books, the tools, the community activities, the library, you know, whatever he needed to his interests. Which brings me back to differentiation and why it doesn't work. When we lump all kinds of kids with all levels of abilities into one classroom, expect one teacher to meet the needs of every student through differentiation, the shortest end of the shortest stick are the smart ones, because the myths about their learning needs continue to prevail. Will something
yes,
as complex as differentiation, yes, as differentiation have a chance of being successful? And not only intellectually, but socially. You can't,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we, okay, think about you, me, any of us as adults, are people who are similar to us, who have similar interests, maybe we can hold interesting conversations with them, to do similar things together. We have a similar background. We make friends with people who we share some commonality with. A gifted child, quote, average students, they don't have that commonality to build friendships with. Simple as, you know, just building a little friendship in elementary school that most of us can take for granted. you can't if they're in a class with children like them.
Mm-hmm.
Fair, it's painful. They're lonely in crowded classrooms because they don't have, you know, things in common with kids to build friendships on. The article goes on. This is as true for kids who struggle to learn as it is for those whose abilities approximate your own, average or advanced. The opportunity to learn alongside these intellectual peers, not repressed. And that's so important. A highly gifted child stuck in a class just because it's age appropriate of kids that are not also gifted like this son or daughter of yours may be, they're just being held back, learning virtually nothing, wasting every day, frustrated and bored. They're learning to hate school. They're not learning new information to advance them in school. He also says the steps we need to take to locate gifted kids with disabilities, in parentheses, yes, they exist, close parentheses, and gifted kids of color from poverty greatly so that our gifted classrooms don't resemble a middle class, quote, white kids only from poverty. I read that wrong. I was about to go off. He said, the steps we need to take to locate gifted kids with disabilities and gifted kids of color or from poverty greatly so that our gifted classrooms don't resemble a middle-class white kids-only club. And lastly, he says, bringing back common sense to how kids get deployed in our nation's classrooms, limit the range, enhance the learning. And that's just very important. That's all that I got together to read tonight. It's just so important that parents pay attention to their children, the little ones. It's got to start when they're young so that you know what they're really capable of.
That's really right. So that when they start school, if the teacher's complaining, you know how to advocate. If the teacher is child wrong or what's going on, go to class, volunteer, find out how you can help. If you need to work with your child or if you need to work with that teacher, take this
good
and just think, okay, you're in good hands. If you get in trouble, it's too bad, you better straighten up. You need to know what's happening and why
your child is unhappy in that class. I can give you another personal example. When my son was in seventh grade, the last year that I let him set foot in a public school, and he was in an advanced English class. And one day after that class, and this is in the book, one day after that class, the teacher came out and he was talking to me, and he was not really happy. And he was saying, your son is always two or three steps ahead of everything I'm doing, and the other kids answer the question, because my son was too quick to answer questions, right? And I didn't say this to him. I didn't want to insult him. Because to me, if that's what was going on, common sense should have told him he did not need his class.
Exactly.
My son needed a more advanced class. But they refused to skip him, as usual. And as I said, that was the last. He didn't even stay for all of seventh grade. After the fall semester, I took him out of him having to try to go through public school. And then, of course, as is in the book documented, college classes at the age of 14 because I took him out of public school. If I'd left him in, he told me he would have dropped out. He hated school that much. And yet, once I freed him from public school, once I freed him from public school, he was able to start college early. And he did very well. He did very well. But by the time he was able to start, he was so disillusioned with anything like a classroom, he just didn't want to be in school anymore. He asked me if he could have a break. Sure. I thought he deserved it after all he had been through. I had no idea that his break was going to last about 10 years. But during that 10 years, he was an entrepreneur. He was really trying to run a business.
And it didn't work out. He wasn't able to make money, so he finally decided to go back to school and get his degree. He's working on that right now. He's got about another year and a half to go, I think. And he's in Golden Key. National Honor Society. He's a computer science major. Yeah, I'm so proud of him because he defied all the stereotypes. Coming from, he's black. His mom was a single parent.
We
didn't have any money other than just barely making ends meet. He defied all the stereotypes. And, yes, I'm very proud. And had it been up to public school, I never would have written the book because our lives would have been a mess.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten into a gang of who knows what because of being that frustrated with the school situation. So I urge you to pay attention to your children and be ready to advocate. I hope better than the teachers do, and that your child needs you to stand up for him or her. And I guess I've run my mouth enough. Would you like to add anything before we close?
Well, I would just like to say to the initiative audience, thank you so much for tuning in. I know, like I shared with Sister Donna, sometimes our listeners just like to listen and take in the conversation and the information. That is beautiful. But for those, and Sister Donna, we do now have a Sunday's host, which is Sister Donna. So please tune in now, definitely on Sundays, because she will be here. For those that have questions or comments, and please leave them in the chat box, or just as she gave you, Donna, please, Sister Donna, give your email again so you can ask questions. Be an advocate for your babies. Be an advocate to help your children to be the best that they can, because those are reflections of us, and it's very important that we do that. And like Sister said again, catch it, and if not too late now, if they're older, still be an advocate. Communicate with the children teachers. You know, that's very important too, because it goes both ways. Yes, the teachers have their responsibilities to teach because they're getting paid for it, and so do you because you are the child's parent or guardian. Well, that's it. I'm going to turn it over to you so you can close out your show. Thank you so much. Yes, ma'am.
Can we clarify the time that my show is going to be, because it was a little confusing tonight.
Yes, ma'am. Please go ahead and whatever you want to share with your audience.
Did we? Yes, ma'am. Okay, I believe we settled on 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time, which is 6 to 8 Central. Or 4 to 6 Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what
we
settled on?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That's what we said.
So Sunday, we should have our 2 hours. And so I thank everyone for listening in to my first show. Murphy didn't win. We got it done. Be back next week. And thank you so much, Sister Pamela, for helping out.
Yes, ma'am. My pleasure, honor, sister. With that, love and peace, everyone. Have a blessed night.
Yeah, peace and blessings.